I remember the first time I heard death doula, which I don't tend to use because I find that death sounds like it's an event, whereas end of life is a journey. I heard that in 2011, and I was like, that's what I do.
I was really interested in the whole end of life doula movement because I am interested in normalizing the idea of death.
I'm not afraid to die. You know, I know I'm completely 100% convinced that death is just like it was before I was born. And our bodies are a battery that runs the electrical signals that make us. And when that battery is no longer producing energy, then, you know. So I'm not afraid, but to be lying in bed terrified because you can't breathe, you know, but just getting enough to keep you alive, I mean, that's unthinkable for me.
I just can't imagine how difficult it must be to have to make that decision about when the right time to go is. Because, like, I want to keep having conversations with my dad as long as possible.
Whether it's made or whether you run the full course, it's still the losing of that person that is, and I can't really, like, I sort of imagine it from time to time, and it's, but then I can't. I think that, like, I know it's going to come one day and then I'm going to have to deal with it, but I can't really imagine what that looks like or feels like.
He's 57. He's still pretty young, you know, like, it could happen to anyone at any time. So I think it's good to fix anything that needs fixing before it's too late.
Hi, I'm Robert Wiemat, and this is episode 5 of My Friend Ted.
I'm Jennifer Malmes. I am an end-of-life doula, and I'm the director of the End-of-Life Doula Association of Canada. An end-of-life doula, or a birth doula, the word doula comes from the Greek word servant. And it really, if you break it down, it means servant in your own terms, so what you want, so serving somebody as they want to be served. I started off in nursing and doing home care, and I was finding that it wasn't always the physical care that people needed. When you're going in, sometimes it's just they just want to have a conversation. What I offer to a family is I go in and I provide them education and support on the choices that they have that they don't know even exist, and I empower them to make those choices for themselves so their family is not left making those choices, but also empowering them to have conversations with their family about what's important to you, what's your quality of life, really using that palliative approach to care. So we do use the palliative approach, which is quality of life. It's a shift from a cure for the illness to care for the person. There is a kind of a turning point with every illness where you know that there is no cure. And that's a real awakening moment for the people who are in that process, who are dying. It's really, two different people with the same diagnosis can react really differently. You have fragile people who's like, well, that's it. Now I'm just gonna wait. And then you have resilient people who are like, okay, let's get my stuff in order. And that's usually the people who come to us. People come to us because they want to get their relationships right. They want to make sure that everything is taken care of. There's no stone unturned. Let's do this well. Some people call it an appropriate death. Some people call it a good death. Whatever that looks like to that person, it could be it's so different for everybody.
I mean, I find it frightening.
Ted's wife, Robin.
But I also think it's because it's not a normal part of our lives. It's hidden. And that's the primary reason when I heard that there were practicing doulas here in the Lower Mainland that I wanted to explore it. But I also have been looking for opportunities to help Ted think about the end of his life.
So I've been thinking a lot. I'll go back to a certain time in my life and really think about what it was like. My sister once told me that in psychology, they say you don't remember the event, you remember the last time you thought about it. And regardless, it's good to think about those times. You know, I probably told you before about, you know, how privileged I am to have lived on this world, you know, on this planet. You know, the fact that there's, you know, this, what we think is infinite wasteland of space where there's absolute no heat whatsoever, absolute zero, no way to support life. And then in these very small areas, is this incredible heat that, again, no way to support life. And then we've got our sun, we've got this little jewel hanging in space that is just the right distance from the sun. If it was any closer, we couldn't live. If it was any further, we could live a bit further, but. And so you're on this planet where when life started, it just was, you know, there's this vast expanse of space with no life whatsoever. And yet here we're just surrounded by it in so many formats. And then, you know, the fact that any of my ancestors for, you know, the beginning of humanity could have been hit by a rock or, you know, or eaten by a eaten by a dinosaur, but, you know, eaten by some predator.
Sure.
You know, and even the fact that when I was born, you know, how many million sperm, and I was the one that got through, you know, and then to be born in Canada, which is such a stable government, peace, order, and good government, you know, and then to be born in this part of, or well, to move to this part of Canada, I mean, it's, I often say it's like winning a lottery every day for your whole life, you know, so it's hard to be too negative about what's happening to me now when I had such a blessed life, and, you know, with Robin and then the kids, you know, I was definitely punching above my weight when I got Robin. And how lucky you are to have the kids who are like they are and who are productive and healthy. You know, it's just, boy, I mean, what are the chances, you know?
I still often don't feel like it is really happening. And if I don't think about it or I'm away for a couple days, I kind of can forget and kind of feel like everything's normal, even though it's not.
This is Hannah, Ted and Robin's daughter, the oldest of the three children.
I've always thought of my dad as someone who can do anything, and whether it's plumbing or electricity or construction or doing something on the computer or building us something or figuring out like a math homework question, like he could really do it all, and a lot of the things he can't do anymore. Which, I mean, means that there's a lot of other things now that have developed out of that. Even though he could do all those things, he didn't necessarily share that knowledge with us. So when we were renovating my house, where he would have normally probably patched up the drywall himself, he had to show me how to do it. And you know, now I know how to patch up drywall, which I might not have known how to do before. And he also has been teaching me a bunch of stuff about Excel, which I've been using at work, and it's been fantastic. I actually really like Excel, and something that I had no idea I really liked, and it's been something that we've actually been really able to bond over while he's not been able to do things that he normally could. And it's been something that we've really actually enjoyed sitting down at the computer and working on together. So,
So do you think about like the before and after? Like, do you think about Ted before he got sick and Ted now?
You know, it's hard for me to remember even what it looked like to see him walk. Like, I kind of wish I could see a video because I feel like it's hard to remember that. It's hard to remember the person who, like, cut a hole in our bedroom floor for us. Actually, he widened the existing hole in the floor and put a slide underneath. And it is hard to make that connect now between that person and, you know, just the different person he is now, who are, it's more about conversations and, you know, talking about podcasts or movies. You know, so it, our relationship has definitely changed a lot. I mean, maybe it's kind of rose colored glasses for your dad and, you know, the kind of person he is, but I really kind of, I really only remember those things that made him, or that, and still make him a really unique and wonderful person who goes out of his way to help other people. When, you know, he was already losing a lot of his ability, he went over to my aunt's house and was trying to help her fix like a leak in her pipe, and it ended up going quite wrong. But he wanted to do that because he wanted to help her, even though it was really difficult for him. He couldn't even really stand up anymore. But, you know, he wanted to help her. And he's always been like that, where he is really like acts of service for other people.
A lot of, almost everything Dad and I did together would involve like me helping him with projects or hanging out in the garage.
This is Jeremy. He's the second oldest.
Or just like watching him tile the floor, whatever it was. We very rarely just sat there because he's such an active person in that way. And I'm the same way as well. I'm not really much one for just sitting. My outlets are different. Like, I do like the handiwork and a little bit of this and that. But for me, like playing music or getting outside and doing stuff, that's what really brings me that kind of joy. But yeah, losing that, I don't know, it was always nice to be able to do something and then you're hanging out and you're still connecting and talking, but it's not hard. You're just, because you have this shared thing that you're doing. And I think losing that over time is really, really hard. We sit and talk and that's not something we've ever really done before. And, you know, we say I love you more than we ever did. It isn't something that we really did. It's because we were men. But I think we're better men for that now.
Stephen is the youngest. And Ted has talked a lot about their strained relationship in the past, a relationship that has improved since Ted got sick.
I think it was both of us, but I was also pretty poorly behaved as well. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, I wasn't a super well-behaved kid. But I think, especially now where, like, I think it's like, it's an emotional bond born out of necessity. And, you know, like, I obviously would far prefer that he isn't sick, that he doesn't have this disease, but I think it's nice that it turned out the way it did and not, you know, like, we didn't get even more, you know, our relationship didn't get even more worse and we, like, and I end up leaving or anything. I'm glad that it went this way. I think our relationship overall has improved emotionally as well. I feel more connected. You know, we do stuff. We'll watch movies or just talk, and it's definitely gotten a lot better. We all decided, just on our own, like, he needs our help. You know, there aren't other people to help him. Like, we can't afford to, you know, have 24-hour nurses or anything. So I think, like, we all just realized we need to step up to the plate, and because the thing is, you know, he's not going to be around. He's not going to be around forever. So we might as well enjoy our time that we have with him now and make sure he's comfortable now so that later, you know, we don't regret it. That's like that. I think that was my biggest concern, was him passing away and then me really having tons of regrets. I think that would make me like, that would really, I think that wouldn't be good. I would think that wouldn't be healthy for the rest of your life, you know. It's really changed like my perspective on life. Like before like the idea of death and like my own mortality was like, oh, it's so far away, you know, like it's years and years and years. Like I don't even want to think about it. But now that I think about it, really, like on average you live what, like 30,000 days, 35,000 days, like the average person. And I've already lived like 6,000 days. Like it's not that long when you think about it. And like, it's just kind of, you know, it's kind of shocking. And especially now, you know, I mean, he's 57, still pretty young, you know, like it's not, you know, it could happen to anyone at any time. So I think it's good to fix anything that needs fixing before it's too late.
You get the best conversations with people after when they've kind of done that change point where it's like, you know what, this is just it. This is what it is. I love those conversations. You're the expert of your family, not me. And my job is to give you those tools. So I'm not flying in on a white horse to save the day. And I think that a lot of people think that that's what doulas do. And there are some people out there that do like that. Oh, let me come in and save you. You're not learning anything, because then what you're saying is, she did this for us. When I want people leaving the experience saying, I did this for my family, or I did this, with a little bit of support maybe.
You know, the idea was have this, you know, kind of like an end of life party, a living memorial. But then I felt like, oh, that'll put so much pressure on me to then, you know, flip the switch. And, you know, I thought it'd be kind of anticlimactic. Everyone comes over and, okay, goodbye, cheerful goodbyes. And then, oh, I decided not to do it. The people go, oh man, I went all the way out there for nothing.
Nobody would say that.
There's 2 hours and I'll never get back. But she said, you know, just have a party. Don't, you know, it doesn't mean anything. It's not, hey, I'm gonna end my life in a couple of days. Just have a party while I can still talk,
you know? Yeah, sure, have people come over and visit, and while you're still able to visit with them and talk to them. I think that'd be really nice, and people would really like that.
Well, think about it. Would you rather, you know, come to music bingo or to a trivia night, or would you rather go to a hospital room? You know, it's less threatening. It's not about the death. And people might not know what to expect, but they're a little bit more willing to show up and put their, just test the waters a little bit.
Initially, he liked the idea of gathering all the people together that he
loves. I should point out, Robin keeps looking over here. That's the text right there. So he's in the room. We're talking about him like he's not here. But actually, he is here. Sorry about that. So this is like a celebration.
Mm-hmm. A celebration of life. But Ted did not want to call it that. He didn't want to style it in that way, because he doesn't want a sort of a party that where people might cry and tell him how brave he is and how much they admire him and how wonderful he is. It's just, he just felt very uncomfortable about that notion. So I dropped the idea, but I still really wanted the opportunity to gather together the people who have meant something to him in his life, partly for their sake, so that they could have a chance to be with him. I think some people feel nervous about coming to see him, and this would give them a reason to overcome their nervousness, or permission, I guess. And but mostly for Ted, so that he could just be with people this disease is very, it's very confining. We're stuck inside, and lots of people do come to see us, which is fabulous. But at any rate, then I hit upon the idea of gathering people together to and play a game. We are a game playing family. And
so when right now we're sitting in your living room, and you know there's games everywhere I turn. There's a game.
This whole window seat, which Ted built, is full of games. Anyway, when Ted was still well, and if he'd be in town, we did go to trivia nights just for entertainment. They're always fundraisers, and it was terrific to support various organizations. But really, for us, it was a fun thing to do.
In typical Robin and Ted fashion, they hosted not one, but two trivia events in order to accommodate all of their friends. What you're hearing is the second one at the Anvil Center in New Westminster. Capacity crowd of friends and co-workers, hundreds of people showing up to spend a couple of hours testing their trivia skills, but mostly to visit with Ted and his family.
Today, we gather together for one main purpose. We will attempt to answer the age-old question, can people from Coquitlam and people from New Westminster spend time together without violence? And what better way than dividing into teams and playing a competitive game? As most of you know, my dad loves trivia. Many of you have suffered through him explaining why water freezes at 32 degrees Fahrenheit, why Honda VTEC engines can run at 23 to 1 air-fuel ratio, or what defines the border between Quebec and Maine. Oh, the hours we can never get back. The other thing is that he loves all of you. So, in celebration of Dad, we have organized a trivia game afternoon with his family and friends. And it only makes sense to raise money for the ALS Society of BC. They have supplied all sorts of equipment to us to make our lives more bearable. And as things progress and needs change, they have taken all the equipment away and brought back more. We will donate all the money raised today to the society. Round of applause for Dad.
In England, my mom took us to a holiday hotel in Hastings by the sea. And while we were there, we went to see the Bayeux Tapestry, dating from the 11th century. The tapestry records the events of the Battle of Hastings from the preparation to the end. We all have our own internal tapestries. Embroidered in our tapestries are our experiences, the places we have visited, and the people we have met. As I look around today, I realize how fortunate I am having all of you woven into my tapestry, and how lucky I am to weave you in again today. It gives me great joy not only to see you all here, but to see the connections everyone has together, and maybe some new ones. Yeah. I think we will all use brightly colored thread would be embroider our memories today.
That was great, Ted. Good memories.
We're off. We got to go get our girl Amanda. But she says hi. And,
it was up here, and I think I stepped out.
Hey, congratulations. Your family is so amazing. Your kids are so amazing. And thank you for inviting us to this. This was really fun.
Thank you so much. So nice to see you too.
Nice to see you.
Good to see you.
Bye.
There's Jeff.
Okay, Ted. That was awesome. Well done.
I hope you like.
You have a good time?
Yeah.
We're going to go to Jacob's hockey game. You know how we...
Yep.
So hockey, soccer, everything.
Thank you so much.
I mean, you look good.
See you soon, buddy.
Goodbye, Jeff.
We'll bring sandwiches again. Okay, egg sandwiches.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, love it. Love it. I'll go hug a little Robin.
Goodbye.
We gotta go, but thank you, Ted. It was so good to see you. Okay, hope to see you again soon.
Okay. We gotta run off too.
Yeah.
We'll see you later this week.
Okay,
that was just amazing. Love you. Your kids are amazing.
It's great to see you, Ted.
Goodbye.
You're the best. Sorry, we have to run now.
Everybody's mugging you, so I'm not gonna.
I think the thing that freaks me out the most is that one day I will be driving to the hospital knowing that he'll be ending his life. And that can really overwhelm me sometimes. The fact, not the fact that he will choose to die, which I completely respect. And I can be okay with that and I can come to terms with that. But the fact that I will one day, who knows when, have to drive to the hospital and have to be sitting in the car. Like that I'll have to get in the car and drive there knowing that's what I'm going there for. And that scares me a lot. And when I kind of hear the mention of it, it kind of jolts me. You know, it hasn't stopped taking me by surprise yet when it's mentioned. And I just can't imagine how difficult it must be to have to make that decision about when the right time to go is. Because, like, I want to keep having conversations with my dad as long as possible. But at the same time, it's such a terrible disease and it takes away so much from you that I know that it's the right thing to do and for him to choose to do.
I would say it's fully his choice and I would support him however he feels about it. I don't have any ethical dilemmas with MAID. I think that it's wonderful for people people can decide what kind of quality of life they want to live with. Thinking about it seems like I don't even know how you deal with that. Like being there and you know, watching that happen or knowing that's what's going on. And I think it's good that he can have that choice. But I think that it's whether it's MAID or whether you run the full course, it's still the losing of that person that is like, I can't really like, I sort of imagine it from time to time and I can't. I think that I know it's going to come one day and then I'm going to have to deal with it, but I can't really imagine what that looks like or feels like, I think, until it happens. Yeah.
He has talked to me about it, and you know, I think like it is the best option. I would definitely do that if I was in his situation as well. And I mean, knowing him, where he loves doing stuff with his hands and building stuff and renovating, like, and he can't do that. Like, this, like I understand, and I like. It's hard to accept, but it's. It's a far better alternative than, you know, than just wasting away. I'll make sure I'm there when it happens. I mean, it's going to suck, obviously. It's going to be probably one of the hardest losses I'll have, like, until my mom passes. But, I mean, that's the thing. Like, there's nothing you can do. That's like, I think it's what's like, the, like, poetic injustice about it is there's no way you can stop it. There's no way you could control it. Like, it just happens. Like, it's awful, but like, there is something poetic about it. Like, that's just life in general, where it giveth and it taketh away. Thank you.
he's really struggling with whether and when to exercise the option of maid, understandably. He's not really able to pinpoint what makes his life have quality. He will say that he doesn't have any quality to his life, and will recognize that he does have moments of joy, but overall, no quality, and asks himself, why do I keep going? And we've talked a lot, but I thought it might be helpful if he talked, or we talked, to someone else, someone with more expertise and information. So that was the other big reason that I wanted a professional. I also thought that perhaps one thing that might help Ted would be to have some closure in different areas of his life. I was a bit hazy on what I think, but I thought, again, that might be someone who could help us define what concerns or goals he might need to identify and then try to meet that. And maybe if that were done, he could feel more ready Well, the way that I'm saying this, it sounds quite calculated. That's not...
But it's something you guys have to think about and are thinking about, and it doesn't sound calculated. It's not something that most people do, right? We don't think about it generally. Most people don't think about this as a thing they have to solve,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, for me and Ted and I talked about this ages ago. You know, for me, death is somewhere down the road.
Yeah.
I'm not planning it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you this is something that's inevitable in your situation.
Mm-hmm.
So. It's sure for someone who's not thinking about it. Maybe it sounds calculated, but it's just a reality that you are facing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe there's no such thing as feeling at peace with the end or with choosing it. Or maybe for some people, but for most people, there isn't. But I'm just hoping that I can help Ted feel. Or know when the time is right. I'm just hoping that I can help him with that.
Let's look at all the things that you plan for. You will have a birth doula for having a baby, and you're making a birth plan. You make wedding plans, and you can get married a few times, and you get a shot at weddings and having babies a few times. I can speak from experience. I have 5 kids. you plan for those events. You buy your life insurance. You do a will. Why aren't you making the plans for when you can't speak for yourself? Why aren't people making plans for death? The most common thing that I find in my line of work is that, a mom or a dad won't want to burden their children with talking about it, so they'll call me to talk about it. And you think that it's going to be a tough conversation to start, and they've been waiting to have this conversation with somebody for a long time. There's not that awkward silence. It's, okay, here's why you're here. Or the family, they'll call me in and they'll say, we want to talk about mom or dad or my husband, my wife. And it's the same thing. They want to have the conversation, but they don't know how to have it with each other. And it comes back, I think, to the sense of hope. They don't want to take away that person's hope for living, or they don't want to share their burdens with them, right? It's a really sad state, because I find that once you have those conversations, everything changes. The masks come off and people are just there.
you told me you had sort of a kind of a some sort of cross between maybe a hallucination and a waking dream where you sort of kind of reviewed these panels in your life.
Yeah. So I was in a big room, and first of all, I was in a hospital being treated for sepsis. Every time I closed my eyes, I would see these hallucinations or waking dreams. And one of them, I was in a room and I was standing on today's date. I looked behind me. On the back wall of the room was the day I experienced my first symptom, my foot drop. And between today and the back wall were each of the terrible days that I had dashed expectation or horrifying discoveries of something starting to fail. And those were indicated by round panels of different sizes. And in that room, I realized I've had too many of them. And I realized right there, it was time to end my life. We talked about lines in the sand, but I was so busy looking forward to see the lines. I didn't realize they were under my feet all along. So that's when I had the resolve to end my life. And I had so many terrible experiences choking in the hospital as they put a tube up my nose down into my airways to try and draw out the mucus and phlegm because I was too weak to cough it up. So at that time, I started thinking over, and I knew I wanted to end my life, but I thought I could donate my organs. So then COVID came along, and they shut down the organ transplant. I decided on April 6th, because it was the right time period away. It was all even numbers in the date. And it seemed like the right amount of time.
So, I mean, you seem quite positive about it too. When we had talked over the last year, you were always wondering, when will I know what the right time is?
Yeah. When will I know? And also, on the day, will it be right? But as I'm now 3 full days away, I realize it is right. I was talking to Robin today about being at peace, but also being scared. And I don't want anyone to think that you can come to this and be 100% at peace. But I still know that even though I'm frightened, it's still the right thing to do. And that gives me peace. And it's a very surreal time right now because, you know, me and my family and friends all know that it's a few days away, but it's hard to process that. It's hard, but it's comforting too. because I think, you know, I talked about the steady flow of humanity being born and living lives and dying every day. And I'm just taking my place. So, I won't have to deal with this anymore.
My friend Ted. I'm Robert. We met in Vancouver. Thanks for listening.